Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with my co-host, Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
I'm hanging in there, Ken. You know, it's been a disappointing start for the Ravens this year, coming into the season as Super Bowl favorites by a lot of sports books, considered the best roster in the NFL, off to a 1-2 start. The Buffalo game, they let slip away, and they were somewhat embarrassed at home on Monday night. So it's tough to stay optimistic right now, but I do sort of feel like this Kansas City game is going to be a little bit of a win-win situation. Either John Harbaugh and his coaching staff and players are going to right the ship and notch their first win in KC with Lamar, or I think there's probably going to be some changes made on the defensive side of the ball.
Okay. I'm not sure I see that as a win necessarily, but if you're saying win or change, I can understand that. So basically you're saying you think Zach Gore's job might be riding on this game.
I do. I don't think the Ravens are going to tolerate the way they were just ran off the field, especially against the run, against the Lions with, you know, as much talent as they have on the team. They're not putting that talent in position. He's not putting that talent in position to succeed. And, you know, he got off to a tough start last year. He had no experience at all coming into as a play caller. They brought in DPs last year to help him. There's been some graphics going around this week that the second half resurgence may be a little overblown. Most of the teams that they beat up on were bottom third offenses. And now they're off to a slow start this year. So I do think that watching that game, there's critiques that can be made schematically and as far as personnel as well.
I think that's probably a little overdone, by the way, in terms of the they played all bad offenses. They played offenses that weren't that great, but they were number one by a wide margin in terms of what they did towards the end of last year. I wouldn't put no stock in that. If you're saying overblown, I don't know how to react to it in terms of what it means. But my own personal feeling is Zach Gore has at least until the bye week. We'll see if that comes true. We want to talk snap counts a little bit because this Ravens defense has been tired as hell. They have nobody left. I mean, there's literally a whole bunch of players out that are they're injured right now in terms of the defensive line, in terms of Kyle Van Noy being out. Travis Jones, you know, missed the end of this last game when the Detroit was able to put it away. The news on that BK.
Yeah, a couple numbers just left me scratching my head. Yeah, Teddy Buchanan was 64 snaps. Trenton Simpson was zero snaps on defense. They were in a platoon before. The defense is tired. Trenton Simpson's a guy that's bulked up. That's a run and hit linebacker. Why not give him a series to see if he can maybe make something happen? Odafe Owe with 28 compared to Green at 52. Owe was a player that could do 70-80% of snaps a couple years ago when they needed him to. The lack of big nickel is really making me scratch my head. When you play a team like Detroit, you want Kyle Hamilton as that force player. And the final point I'll make is 30th in blitz percentage across the league. They were up this last week, 48%, but they're still 30th in the league. When you enter the season with the NFL's most talented secondary, you got to, I think, load the box. You see what these other teams have done against the Ravens. Why are they not doing them back to the other teams?
All right, let's start with the blitzes because they play two quarterbacks that are kind of great read quarterbacks. And you blitz Flacco all you want, and they did. They went after him a lot more with numbers, and they were very effective doing it. But what they did against Allen and Goff, I think, was just survival to do that. I don't think they should go all out over to Mahomes either, because I think Mahomes has beaten the blitz so regularly against the Ravens, it's not even funny.
Mahomes, I'd agree.
Yeah, so it's I think there's a problem with that, and I think we all need to take back a step back from the schematic component and the we know better about the Ravens scheme and just, you know, use that currency wisely. I think I'm not going to say there's 11 things wrong with this right now. I'd love to see more big nickel. I think that's an enormous weapon that the Ravens have, and I think it hasn't been used. I think it's one of the few ways in which the Ravens can change their defensive fortunes in 2025 as days of Hamilton move back up to the front. And to do it, they need to trust Lowry, I believe, mm-hmm. on the back end to play the half field. By the way, this is big. Lowry played the last snap of the first half when they had two deep, not Kane. So I do believe he's ahead of Kane in terms of any kind of a two deep safety role they may have in mind. That might be a leap. That may have just been they really liked him better for, you know, a very deep back end. But Kane's a special teams player. If you treat that as a special teams player, you need to stop them from getting to the goal line. Kane is probably going to be the better tackler. So they're really, I think they're saying Lowry is the better back end half field defender with that move. So he'd be the guy then that they'd be looking at bringing in and playing more, or they'd have to go out and get a safety from somewhere else that they haven't yet tapped, including the guy the Texans got rid of.
Gardner Johnson.
Yeah, Gardner Johnson.
I don't think he's a locker room fit for Harbaugh. No, yeah. He's not a locker room fit for Harbaugh. But it just, if you look back, even back towards when Roquan was traded for, that's when Hamilton started playing big nickel. And you can really trace a line between the Ravens generating turnovers and having the defense that could get off the field to having Kyle Hamilton towards the line of scrimmage. They got to find a way to do that, I think, whether by trade or by promotion.
Yeah, I mean, and the counter to that would be they moved Hamilton back off the line of scrimmage, and that's when they became the number one defense last year. They literally, at exactly the same time, they were terrible with him playing up front, you know, as needed, and then they moved him to the back end exclusively, and they were great.
The critique I'm not I would make that, about the second half is the lack of turn takeaways, because they still rank near the bottom of the league, and that's what Jack Gore said at his press conference today. You either got to take takeaways. They've lost two games. They've had zero takeaways in both.
Yeah. Well, that is important. You know, no doubt about it. And to me, the big snap count issue that the Ravens have right now is not entirely on the defense. I think it's also on the offense, not sustaining drives. And they've lost snap count by 19.7 per game. They're down 59 snaps in three games. That's absurd.
I have some data on success rate, but I'll save it for a later segment because I think they definitely go hand in hand, no question.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Let's talk the injury report right now, because I think that's the story that's front and center for the Ravens today.
Absolutely. So as we know, they've been banged up on the front. Let's see. Travis Jones here was limited on Thursday. DNP on Wednesday with a knee. You know, we've seen big uglies tough it out before. They showed some clips of him hitting the blocking sled. Didn't look quite the full health. So we'll see how that goes. Isaiah Likely, two limiteds in a row. Hasn't quite got to that full yet. Nnamdi Madubuike did not practice. Both days already been ruled out. Patrick Ricard, the missing man. Apparently Jeff Zarebek hasn't even seen him at the castle in over a month. Ronnie Stanley. Now, this is maybe concerning. Two DNPs in a row with an ankle. Kyle Van Noy still not practicing with the hamstring. And then Roderick Washington, your other defensive lineman who you're counting on. You paid him a couple years ago. Two DNPs with an ankle injury. So, they're going to need some reinforcements on the D-line, no question.
Yeah, the Stanley injury to me is the additional bad news, although I don't think Travis Jones will be effective if he plays. I think, unfortunately, we've seen Travis Jones play hurt last year, and it wasn't really pretty. Certainly didn't look like Travis Jones at his best, you know, when he's on the field like that. So I'm frustrated a little bit if Travis Jones is being treated. Okay, let's go back a little bit. There's a book, Ball Four, out there by Jim Bouton, and it's one of the great baseball books that's ever been written. He's doing some tape recorded musings of his life with the 1969 Seattle Pilots. They only existed for 1 year. They moved to Milwaukee before the next season, and they became the Brewers. But that year, Bouton, who'd been an ex-Yankee, was trying to make a comeback with the Pilots, and he would talk about his days with the Yankees. And this is where it gets to the Travis Jones thing. And he had all these stories about Mickey Mantle, because he looked up to Mickey Mantle pretty much when he joined the Yankees. He was a young guy who'd won a couple 20 game seasons and whatnot. But the thing that Mantle would always be leading him around and on all these quest to shoot beaver and do other things, which basically meant they would take mirrors and look under doors at hotel rooms. And there were certain hotels that were nicer, and they would place people on the roof and try and where these hotels were laid out in L shape, so everybody had outside views kind of thing. They would be looking into the rooms and try to find where the attractive women were. And then it's all this stuff that, like, you know, what are these guys, sixth graders, you know?
That's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. It's a great book, by the way, really, really a great read. But and a lot of things were said about Mantle, and Kuhn actually wanted him to just shut the hell up and not publish the book at the time it was done. But anyway, I highly recommend the book. The point I'm making about this is that he would talk about how Ralph Houk would go to Mantle. He was managing the Yankees at the time, would go to Mantle before every game and say, "How's the knee feeling, Mick?" And Mantle would say, it feels terrible again today. I'm not able to move around and whatnot. And he'd say, "Well, you know, we really need you out there." I think that might be happening with Travis Jones. I mean, they really need him out there. There's no two ways about it. I think they're probably asking to do more. I hope they're not talking about, this is a contract year. It's really important for you to, you know, show us what you've got and show the rest of the league what you've got, for that matter, in order to get the best possible contract. This is just, they need to get a right Travis Jones out there before the season's over. I wouldn't put it all on this one game. There's a lot riding on this game. The possibility of getting the number two seed in the AFC may well be on the line with this game. But the difference between that and the hope of having a healthy Travis Jones who helps lead the Ravens, you know, defense down the stretch is just very different. And particularly when you have other injuries on the team that look very serious, I just wouldn't push it with Jones.
Yep. Well said.
You
know, it's cluster injuries, right? Your two starting defensive tackles both hurt at the same time. The Ravens did make some practice squad moves to bolster that unit, signing Taven Bryant, who was a former first-round pick, played for Indianapolis, and Josh Tupu, who's been with the Ravens on and off for, I think, a year or so. In order to make room, they released veterans Anthony Miller and Dearness Johnson, running back and wide receiver. They don't look like they have a need for either of those two positions. I am cautiously optimistic that these street defensive tackles can perform at a replacement level that would allow the Ravens to overcome these injuries. We've seen it before. We saw it in 2019.
Yeah.
We've seen Kimo Atto signed in midseason. We've seen it before. These are not the highly tuned athletes that need to be, you know, in doing 10 hours of training every single day. I think the key is for the linebackers to stop waiting for the double team to get to them and key on the ball and fill the gap. That was really the biggest problem. I thought Roquan had a terrible game after his best game last week.
Yeah, it was an odd kind of sequence of games there. And Roquan actually started off this game with a couple of nice plays. But then, you know, play after play, he's getting blocked on a lot of these big runs. And he certainly showed up in our notes. So did Buchanan, by the way, in terms of being blocked play after play on all of the winning runs, the runs of 6+ yards from the Lions in this game. Mm-hmm. So ugly indeed. I guess I'm not as optimistic as you are about how well the line will look. I mean, the battery of the Ravens pass rush has been lost with Jones and Madubuike out. Those two are what drive it. They no longer have a guy on the interior that you just have to double. And that means that the outside guys are going to face additional pressure. It means, you know, there'll be more one-on-two situations there. I think they're going to have to do a lot more to scheme for pressure. And I think that is incredibly dangerous against Mahomes because he reads it very well and will throw hot and beat you there.
I think Orr needs to implement some run blitzes and put more guys in the box. Not necessarily go after Mahomes and leave, you know, receivers streaking down the field. And the Chiefs injury report, Xavier Worthy apparently is back at practicing full. So they do have their speed threat back. Hollywood's been pretty disappointing this year. But the Ravens have the corners, right? They have Wiggins and Awuzie. And Marlon, I think, it was a tough matchup. You know, lining up against Amon-Ra with a two-way go out of the slot with no safety help on a high leverage down. I think that's the nature of the cornerback play where they can get beat. So I would lean on the cornerbacks and see if you can add another body or two to the box and maybe you solve it that way.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's a not unreasonable situation. The Chiefs play a lot of 12 with Gray and Kelsey. So It's a good game for Big Nickel to try that if they want to try different personnel to get it done. I think if you want to stop the run, Hamilton up front is probably the way to go. I think he's the secret sauce that can probably change your fortunes there. But anyway, I thought Aeneas Peebles was not terrible in this last game. He gave the Ravens a little bit of pass rush. I just don't think he's ready to be the every third down retech that the Ravens are going to really depend on, and particularly not when it's just as easy now if whoever else they may have at nose tackle or mm-hmm. as a, you know, a three. They played a lot of rush nickel in this last game where they had three outside linebackers on the field.
Right. Robinson.
Mm-hmm. With Robinson kicking inside. Yeah. And Green and away on the outside.
Away.
Yeah. So they tried that, but that makes it more difficult for Peebles because he's more likely to get a double team under those situation under those circumstances and not be the kind of dangerous penetrator that he might be. Jenkins actually, I thought, played pretty well in this last game. Maybe, you know, a big game for Jenkins is at the root of what the Ravens need in this game.
Yep, exactly. A lot of snaps. He could probably do 65% of the snaps, maybe more. Yeah. What do you think of Brent Urban season debut?
Not any worse than I would have expected. He was okay. Mm-hmm. I think he can be a guy who denies space, but Urban has a very specific role. It's as a five tech in base defense, and you just don't play that much of that. If any time the Kansas City puts a third wide receiver on the field, basically the Ravens can't play that. So it's only against 12 personnel early downs that they would typically play it. 12 personnel on a third down and medium to long, they're going to go to the dime or they're going to go to a nickel at the very least. By the way, that's been one of my frustrations is they have not seemed to want to put a third safety in dime. They've been leaving Buchanan on the field a lot. Really, yeah, I agree. Do not like that.
I think Andy Reid's going to put the bullseye on the inside linebackers. We've seen him do it in previous games. I go back to Ray Lewis, just real quick aside. The year before they drafted Talori Nata, he was saying, the guards are getting to me. And then they drafted Talori Nata to keep him clean. And I think that was the same year they switched to a 34 instead of a 43, but it might have been the year before. But
4 years before, but that's okay.
Okay, I'm sorry. But either way, it wasn't like he was made a non-factor. Now we're talking about a first ballot Hall of Famer, but Roquan's paid very well. So I'll leave it there.
Yeah. Well, that's fair. I mean, expecting more out of Roquan is not unreasonable, given what he's making and given, what the Ravens need him to do to be a leader of the defense. A couple other options the Ravens have had in terms of addressing the DL with ex-Ravens in particular are still available to them on other practice squads. And in particular, mm-hmm. Tampa Bay's practice squad have two guys with a Ravens background. The first is Jason Jones, who could be signed to the active roster. He's a nose tackle and they could have him. They just need to make a 3-week commitment to having him. Mm-hmm. But obviously they decided that Taven Bryant or really Josh Tupou, who's really more of a nose tackle than anything, is the guy they'd rather have than a rookie who has some future potentially on the roster. I'm a little bothered by that decision. I'd be okay if they went to Okoye and they thought he was better than Jones. I wouldn't have a huge problem with it. I just think Jones is probably a better choice than Tupou.
Yeah, I think I'd agree. We were excited about him in the preseason. It's not the end of the world if you put bigger bodies, multiple one tech size players on the field at the same time when you're in this situation. You got to do what you got to do sometimes. If you have to sacrifice a little bit of the penetration from the inside to not get gashed, sometimes you got to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's dangerous as hell. I mean, I do think that Mahomes will take advantage of it in terms of passing, but I think you're right. I think it's more important to prove you can stop the run in some ways. And that would be the way to do it. And it was the 2019 way that they did it. It's also been the way in going back to Pierce's rookie year. It was one of the big changes that really helped the defense that year was having Pierce at the nose and Brandon Williams at the three.
Yep.
So, all right. The other guy, with a Ravens background that they could try and get back in the building. I don't know how much bad blood there is over how it went down last time, but Nash Hutmaker is on the Tampa Bay practice squad. And he's a guy who has a really good pass rush history at Nebraska, who might be a guy who could help them at three tech. And that's, honestly, with Matabike out, I mean, they're down to Peebles only at that three tech spot. They need somebody else who can provide them something at that spot. I don't think it can be all Peebles, and I don't think it's wise to have the only choice be two nose tackles on the field. So I think if I'm looking for a three, Hutmaker is a guy that I would consider again. It's a pretty big reach down, but Hutmaker was a guy that had a very interesting background coming out of Nebraska and was a guy the Ravens signed as a kind of a priority free agent or priority UDFA. And then he got to the building and Jeff Srebeck's comment to me was that he thinks they probably had a physical and they were unhappy with something and they decided to give him a tryout instead of signed a UDFA contract.
Mm-hmm.
And he had basically the same set of questions. He asked the question directly of Harbaugh. Harbaugh thought he had been signed as a UDFA. And then all of a sudden the next day he's been released and he signed with Tampa Bay, like right away.
I think part of the issue with this, the way this defensive line room was constructed, is Broderick Washington, a player they paid who hasn't quite lived up to the contract. And if you could do it over again, you wouldn't have given him that contract, and you would have got a little bit younger in that room, so that when this situation arose, Washington's current injury notwithstanding, I feel as confident in any of the practice squad players as Washington at this point. So it is what it is. But
that is the one kind of recent mid-level contract kind of born out of desperation that I'd really point to as being a particularly non-effective move.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Agreed.
All right, let's move over to the offensive line, because a couple of things are going on here. First of all, I'll say this in a very broad sense. The offensive line really was not the problem against the Lions, as much as I think everybody thinks it was. It was an average performance by the offensive line. A couple B's, a D from Stanley, a C- from Rosengarten wasn't great. We had the best game of the year from both Voorhees and Linderbaum. Mm-hmm. And Fa'alele tossed in a C, which kind of stabilizing his results between some good and some bad. Really looking at it now, he's had one bad game in the last eight. So I don't think, you know, he's got some significant leash before he loses his job. Let's put it that way, at least among the Fa'alele haters. In terms of Voorhees, he's got a lush leash, but he has more than he did before last week, you know, when he turns in a decent game like that.
I'd agree. So I'm going to weave in some rushing success rate stats here. And I was discussing this with Daniel Rees last night, so I'm going to give him credit for the numbers. But Derrick Henry last year's success rate was 48%, down 41.
Whoa. We're using a different definition of success rate, I think, if you've got him at only 48. So
last year.
This is right. No, it's like 59. It was a career high. I think success rate. Well, let me just say this. I want you to call out the statistics as you will in terms of
what yes.
they were in his career. But success rate can be measured by the Football Outsiders method or by a positive EPA method. And the positive EPA method is fairly draconian in terms of reducing that success rate to what teams are generally happy with, particularly when they're running the ball to close out the game. So the numbers that I publish for Lamar Jackson over the years in terms of how much he's improved success rate are all the Football Outsiders method. And it's the one that's also published on Pro Football Reference. That said, please, yours is a positive EPA method. I just want to make the distinction and appreciate Dan for producing the stats.
Yes, very good. Now, here's the interesting part. Success rate last year with Patrick Ricard on the field was the same as without. So that kind of, you know, makes you raise your eyebrows a little bit. And here's probably the most telling stat, according to Dan's math. Last year was 44% running to the left side. This year it's all the way down to 23 running to the left side. So perhaps Patrick McCary's loss was being a little bit underrated.
It's a right-handed run game, and Fa'alele does not pull, basically. He does almost
it just to the left side. But, you know, hypothetically, he would pull last year the same he'd pull this year. So I think you were watching the games. We're seeing, we're seeing them get stopped. Derrick Henry's getting stopped before gaining positive yardage more than he was last year.
They've played in the last two games. This was not as true with Buffalo. Buffalo was off and on stopping the run, but they allowed certainly a lot of big run plays to the Ravens in that first game before they got the big fumble to basically put it away. The last two games, the Cleveland Browns and the Lions basically said, "I dare you to pass the ball and win the game that way." The Cleveland was very much stacked up at the line of scrimmage. Detroit, by the way, is a team that plays a lot of base defense versus 11 personnel. Think about that for a second, because 11 personnel forces the nickel. Forces you to put a cornerback on the field, and they say no problem. We'll cover your slot receiver with a linebacker.
Yeah, Tampa did that a couple of years ago, if I recall. It's an interesting strategy.
So anyway, it is an interesting strategy, but they seem to make it work in this game. Lamar had a very good game in aggregate, but he did put the ball in danger a couple of times. Was lucky to get away without interceptions, and he beat his expectation by a little over 50 yards in the game. It was definitely a positive result from that standpoint, but I don't think he punished them enough for what they were able to do to our run game. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. and that is very frustrating. And that trade-off, I think if Detroit knew what Lamar's stats were going to be, they'd say, no, we need to come up with a different game plan to do something differently. But you know, the aggregate thing and holding the Ravens to 85 rushing yards, that certainly in aggregate was very effective. And another Henry fumble was the cherry on the cake for that.
Yeah. So, you know, I could see games where the run defense could get pushed around if you're missing Matabike and Jones is hobbled. I could see games where the pass defense, I did not foresee an issue running the ball. You have almost everybody back. You have Derrick Henry. You just gave him a fresh contract. You have Lamar. You have a lot of the same schemes still. That has been the most surprising element to this. And you're 1,000% right. Those snaps wear on the defense. And if you could pick up these, you know, keep a long drive going, that would do wonders for the defense, I believe.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the Lions really put on a 2019 Ravens masterclass by going for it three times on fourth down and making it all three times. That's exactly that situation is a nightmare for a defense. And I don't know if you remember even the Dolphins game, the first game of the year, Anthony Levine ran for 60 yards on fourth and three out of a punt formation.
I don't remember that one. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think
it was a big one early on. But they, for the entire year, they had a very high number of fourth down attempts. And that was part of what fueled a very large snap count win for the year. They've got to find some way to change their fortunes that way. Being a big strike offense is reminding me of the early 90s Oilers and the way the Warren Moon offense, the run and shoot, was mm-hmm. basically had a lot of, you know, ability to generate points, but also, you know, you just couldn't run it and keep your defense healthy. 96 Ravens, another example of a team that could run no huddle with the best of them, but their defense could not stand up to that. They were
strategically hurt. You'd almost rather have Gus Edwards, who's falls forward every time, but rarely breaks a big one. I mean, hopefully he doesn't fumble as often. Yeah. Well, you know, the fumbling, I can't blame him too much. He looks like he's holding it high and tight. They're punching the ball. The issue is now that they've seen that happen three times, every player in the league is going to be trying to do that. So we'll see how it goes. Yeah. Yeah. We'll see.
All right. Well, let's talk about what they can do with the offensive line. I'll start off by saying I'm generally of the opinion that there probably is nothing they can do at this point about the offensive line at the top of it. Okay. Meaning what can they do to change the 2025 starters, like right this second? The only possible area they have would be, I think, at left tackle, where if they really needed a replacement, because I don't think Joe Noteboom is going to get it done. I do not think he's up to the task. And I think Carson Vinson is at least a year away. Although if he was forced into duty, that would really be awful.
What about, and this is just spitballing here, but what about kicking Rosengarten over to left guard and putting Vinson in at right tackle? Almost like the way they did going into 2012 playoffs, except the other side of the ball or the other side of the line.
I hear you on that. I just don't think Vinson is nearly ready. Okay. Vincent also, I think, is left tackle or bust in the NFL. Honestly, I don't think he'll be a good right tackle. He's got good mobility, and he's got good feet that you want at left tackle, but a very vertical build. Mm-hmm. Think of him as being more like Andrew Voorhees as a guard, in the way you don't have a lot of lower weight in your hips and sand in the pants. I just that kind of player I don't see as working out anywhere. I mean, he's a pure length and feet guy, and those guys almost always are left tackle or bust. So
he doesn't have the Jonathan Ogden ability to play guard its first season. Not quite as talented as the number four.
Yeah. Yeah, well, what are you going to do?
It's I think the offensive line's performing well enough. The mm-hmm. offense is putting points on the board. The problem is the defense, really. Right. I mean, if that's what you look at.
Well, I'm with you. And obviously, you know, we have I have the greatest degree of respect for you. Let me put it that way. And I don't want to like be nixing a bunch of things you're saying. We're just having a healthy debate about our franchise, which we're totally freaking frustrated with for these first 3 weeks.
Likewise, 100%.
All right. But that's the real question I want to try and answer on it. Is this team, the 2025 Ravens, with their current set of injuries, really is what I'm getting at? Mm-hmm. Is it worth trying to make multiple moves to save this season And what I'm really saying is they can make as many moves as they want, as far as I'm concerned, of the 2019 variety, where they're basically mm-hmm. taking either a distressed asset, see Peters, Marcus, where nobody else thinks he has any value at all, and you pick him up for a box of chips kind of thing. It was a fourth round pick.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
It's not nothing, but it's very little.
And Peanut Owusu. Don't forget him.
It was Kenny Young they traded.
Oh, Kenny Young.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. He was the ice cream cone guy. So the question is, I don't have any problem with those kind of moves. I don't have any problem with signing two nose tackles off the street. I don't have any problem with bringing in another Jihad Ward to supplement mm-hmm. your defensive line, which, you know, we may have seen already done so far. Actually, your edge rusher core in the case of Ward. And I certainly don't have any problem bringing in any number of inside linebackers if that's what's needed to fix the defense, like they did with LJ Fort and like they did with Josh Bynes in 2019. Right. Those kind of moves, those penny ante moves, make as many as you need. And DaCosta has proven absolutely prescient in terms of figuring out which ones are going to help the team enough this year to get it done. What I really don't want to see done this year is a lot of high value moves that trade away a lot of draft capital for future years. I think there's not enough right now. There's not enough here to think that this either A, won't be fixable during the regular season with the current injuries they have, because I think they'll at least limp into the playoffs with this team. Mm-hmm. That would be my feeling right now. It could get worse. If more injuries occur, I might have to recant on that. But I think that the chance of them to make a deep run was largely dependent on seeding. And if they lose the game against Kansas City, they'll be in a position where they really can't get the one or the two seed, which means they might have to go to both of Buffalo and Kansas City in right. the playoffs.
Yeah, it's I definitely hear you, Ken. I definitely hear you. There's it was a little bit unfortunate that Kyle Van Noy got hurt the same weekend that Jadeveon Clowney signed, because mm-hmm. he would have been a perfect guy to work into the mix seamless. There's been a – go ahead, I'm sorry.
I just want to go back to the Jadeveon Clowney thing for one thing, because this is an additional frustration I have, and I should have mentioned it in the snap count when I was thinking about it. But David Ajabo comes off the inactive list, the healthy scratch list for 2 weeks. After he's been talked up all offseason in a way that didn't make any freaking sense.
Right.
Okay. And he has six snaps. I don't care if he lined up off ball. I don't care if they put him at cornerback. The fact that he played six snaps and you're asking Mike Green, a rookie, to play 52. Right.
That's the problem I have.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
And
that's just too much for a rookie. But anyway, there's been a groundswell on social media this week from some respected, longtime Ravens fans. This is the year they got to trade a first round pick, and they're looking at the cellar dwellers. And hey, Carolina has Derrick Brown, and Tennessee has Jeffrey Simmons, and the Jets have Quinn Williams, and the Giants have Dexter Lawrence. I am not in favor of making any of those, pie in the sky moves. I don't think you could fit them under the cap. I think it's going to disenfranchise the players you have impending free agents. And they're great players, but I don't necessarily want to invest that much into the defensive line. You have other needs you need. Yeah. So, you know, what would I personally would be okay just because I think Lamar is playing at a high level and sometimes a quarterback can buoy you. I would be okay with parting with one second round pick. That'd be as high as I would go, but it's got to be a player who is either under for a reasonable contract for multiple years or that you think you can re-sign, who also plays an impact position that, that really counts in the 2 minute drill.
All right. Well, Dexter Lawrence, he's in the last year of his guaranteed contract right now. I don't know how he's playing right now is the problem. I don't know if he's really got it together, but he's 20 years old and possibly that's a player you'd bring in to get it done for you. I don't think he's worth a first round pick. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say that right now.
Right.
I'd have to see how he's, I'd really have to see more about how he's playing right now. I don't know if there's a left tackle available somewhere who might be another player the Ravens would need. And maybe a lot of people consider it very foolish to trade for a left tackle when you have two perfectly good tackles, just one of them's hurt.
Right. But would you be looking at a left tackle more as an injury replacement for Ronnie or potentially to change Ronnie's position?
Not to change Ronnie's position. I think if you had a left tackle who possibly had some versatility too, but could play a decent left tackle and then move to guard at some point, I don't think that would be necessarily a bad thing. I think you probably though are looking for an older rental who's just there for this year with his team, so it minimizes the cost. Mm-hmm. And even those guys, I mean, if it's anybody with a multi-year deal, then you're basically going to have to give up more draft capital in order for that team to pay off what's left of his salary for this year, so the Ravens can fit him under the cap.
Yeah,
And that's that's what they had to do with Roquan. It was worth it in his case, I think. I think the argument would be that the Roquan thing broke down when he signed his next contract. It wasn't that the initial price paid for him was not necessarily too high. There's a second and a fifth that was in the end after they had to pony up additional change to get some of the cap paid down by the Bears.
They're just not great in the second. Let's be honest. The third round laps their second round. But I don't know. You know, it's let's see. You know, Kansas City. If they go make a statement in Arrowhead, then maybe you are saying, let me dangle a second round pick out there and see what kind of a big fish I can grab. You know, it's a lot depends. There's still 5 weeks till the trade deadline. I wouldn't make any moves till you have a little bit better feel for where your team really is.
We got a few questions. I want to get back to that, but maybe we talk for a second about the retirement of Russell Wilson because it's NFL news and a little bit surprising after 3 weeks, first of all, that Jackson Dart is thrown into the fray when the Giants have quite a difficult set of opponents coming up.
Hmm.
And I've seen the list, it's an impressive set. And, you know, playing the same division with the Eagles and the Commanders, you're going to get some of that. I think there's three of those games, including two against the Eagles, are on the list next six or seven for Jackson Dart. And then they have other good teams that they're playing during that time. But Russell Wilson being done so quickly in the Giants, it wasn't exactly how I predicted it.
Yeah, I think they like Dart, and they think, I guess the coach and the GM say, well, if we can show a little promise with Dart, maybe we can save our jobs. And Wilson likes the limelight. He doesn't want to be riding the bench, and I believe they have Jameis Winston as the third quarterback. So, I don't really have much to say about that, but Russell Wilson was a great player in his prime. He was one of my favorite quarterbacks back before Lamar Jackson entered the league and, you know, have a good legacy. But journeyman, three different teams in 3 years, and didn't work out very well for him.
It almost surprises me a little bit that Russell Wilson is not being traded to the Bengals right now.
Hmm.
I'm not saying it'd be the ideal situation, but, you know, they've got a couple of big outside receivers. Russell Wilson likes to throw the ball up. It's not like the Bengals are a Russell Wilson away from winning the AFC North,
right?
But they'd be a hell of a lot better football team if they had him than what they have with Browning and his, set of flotation devices and interceptions he's had the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, tough game for Browning last week for sure.
All right, we've got a few mailbag questions. Maybe you go out there too, if you would, and kind of pick a question that kind of tickles your fancy here. But I'll go for the first from Cars Ruin Cities. A big multi-part question from Garnett too that we need to dissect a little bit and pick a couple parts of it that I think are appropriate to this show. I think some of those are appropriate to the offense as well.
Sure.
But we've got Cars Ruin City said, work off the assumption that Beeks is A, done for the year, and I'm not sure if this is an and or an or, but B, done for his career. How do you manage assets? I'm going to assume this is an or. So if Matt Ifbike is done for the year, but not done for his career, so it's some sort of a muscle strain that he's expected to recover from, but it's going to knock him out for the entire season. Do you change drastically what you do in 2025, or do you pretty much ride the players you have? Or do you maybe go after one of the four defensive linemen that you named who are out there and available?
It depends on how they fare the next couple of weeks. If they lose to the Rams and the Chiefs and look anemic against the Texans, you ride with which maybe even become sellers, to be honest. Matt Ifbike, if he retired after this season, has $51.9 million in dead money. So it would accelerate $21 million against the cap. So that is a large chunk of change, unless there's some kind of injury language in his contract that would allow the Ravens to circumvent the cap with that.
Right. And there may be guarantees for injury that would take it further than the guarantees that are out on OTC, I'm afraid. So
$52 million in dead money, that's a big number.
Yeah, and they could split that over 2 years, I assume. It's still, it's going to eviscerate the cap if they have to take that, even with a restructure of Lamar. I mean, it would be awful. I really hope it's not a retirement thing. I hope for Matt Ifbike's sake. I hope for the Ravens' sake. I in a lot of ways, I hope for the NFL's sake that we don't have another career-ending injury of that type that's occurred somewhere. It's bad for the game. For that to be the case, and hopefully. You know, with Orr, and he certainly understands this, it was a congenital defect that was the problem. With Matt Ifbike, I really, really hope it's not that. But they've said it's been getting worse and not good.
Apparently, Orr had some quotes today that were maybe a little bit more of an optimistic tone. But who knows if that's just gamesmanship heading into the game. Yeah. Let's get to our friend Garnett here. Is it safe? So, Garnett West, is it safe to say Jackson has PTSD when it comes to the pocket? I feel like he put himself in bad situations by trying to overcompensate for the O-line by taking abnormal dropbacks in order for him to counter defenders.
So, I'll take a shot at that first. I don't think he's incorrect in saying that Jackson is dropping additional yardage at times when he sees the rush coming, and that may be disadvantaging tackles. There is some of that. I don't think that's necessarily worked out poorly for Jackson and the Ravens so far. For instance, in that first game when they had the big run that basically sent a lot of Buffalo fans to the exit prematurely, as it turned out, but it sent a lot of them to the exit, where he, you know, dropped back 20 yards to escape two defenders and then ran for almost 20, might have been 19 at the end of that. I mean, people throw their arms up at that kind of a play. He had plays like that in this last game, including the 37-yard pass to Justice Hill, right? Was a escape backwards and then make a throw. I think it's very important to let Lamar be Lamar in two significant ways. One is he's the master of understanding what he has to do to escape pressure, and he's been outstanding. I trust his judgment to a tremendous degree. The second is it happens on plays where he tries to make a run from a pocket on a pass play. So when he leaves the pocket, he's not worried about picking up one extra sack. He's trying to make a positive play for the Ravens. And the difference between a plus one and a zero is one difference in the sack column. Mm-hmm. And that's where there was a sack zero in this game. I mean, it's not even a sack really. It's no worse than an incomplete pass. And you know, you should even look at it. But what it really shone out in this game was just how effective the Lions were in using the spy to contain Lamar as he approached the line of scrimmage after leaving the pocket, after kind of deciding he was going to leave the pocket.
Yeah, for sure. That was a good scheme they had there. You know, you say you can't spy Lamar. Well, Lions did it pretty well. I have a hard time criticizing Lamar. He's the only cornerstone contract on this team that's played up to his billing by the first three games this year, in my opinion. And I think some of the sacks were because Tylan Wallace was on the field too much. 32 snaps for Wallace compared to 14 for Hopkins and 7 for Walker. Hopkins has a contested catch ability that you can use to bail out when you're in trouble. Walker, they had a stat today that his 17.3 miles per hour is the fastest route running in the league. And, you know, Tylan Wallace, I know you've been fond of his run blocking in the past, Ken, but PFF, for whatever it's worth, PFF has him at 31.2 grade on run blocking this year compared to Bateman at 78 or 79 almost. So if they're really in a pinch, and Wallace only played 8 special team snaps, so if they're really in a pinch, and maybe you can get Mitchell in even, Wallace, you might want to look at him, possibly.
Okay. I mean, I could see that. I could see sitting Wallace for Mitchell if they really had to. I mean, Wallace is a very important special teams player for them, and the snaps that he's doing are coverage snaps. And if you take Wallace out, who's been one of the guys who's been back there on kickoffs also, then you have to have somebody to replace him. So Mitchell might be a reasonable shot at that. And if he's having a tough year, that's something. I will say that Wallace prevented an interception in this game on that ill-advised Henry pass. So yeah. It was you had literally a no, that's Ed Reed situation from the, right. to the 2004 game where the pass Edwards. Should never have been thrown. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Herm no, Edwards and Lamont Jordan threw the pass. So it's like,
Andrew. Yeah. But why is Wallace the guy running that route? You know, he's as far as getting a jump ball and a fade in the end zone, he's probably the least I would want. I know there's some trickeration and we're going to put our run blocking wide receivers in while we pass. And that's how he got his touchdown last week. But I'd look at that. I'd look at that at least.
Okay.
So,
all right. Fair criticism.
Garnett going on number two. With the current neck injury that Matabike has, and which I think is career threatening, do you think that creates an opportunity for a young Okoye to get a call up?
I guess it's not obvious to me that he'd be the guy. They signed two new ones, obviously, so they're not completely sanguine about their practice squad depth here. Okoye is a big project still. He doesn't really set his feet particularly well, and he is definitely not a big snap load guy from what I've seen in terms of his inability to maintain his wind at camp.
Right.
So I think that I would have real questions about it. That said, tremendous athletic upside, but still has a ways to go. And, you know, he's not a spring chicken anymore. This is his third full season on a practice mm-hmm. squad in the NFL. So, and nobody picked him up when the Ravens cut him.
Yeah.
He's not an unknown commodity around this league.
I defer to your judgment on that one completely. Question three from Garnett. This is more of a GM question. Do you gentlemen believe we could have been more aggressive in the interior on both sides of the ball this offseason?
Sure. Could they have been? I want to hear yours. Why don't you take the offensive line first? I'll respond, and then I'll talk about the defensive line.
I think this is where the cost of moneyballs. He moneyballs the mm-hmm. offensive line. You can't pay everybody. He paid a running back. You paid a linebacker. Both moves I disagree with. But if once you do that, you got to go cheap somewhere else. And that's where he went. So this is where the BPA comes into play too, because they don't want to reach in the draft. They don't want to take a player that they don't have graded higher, even if it's a more needy position or more valuable position. Mm-hmm. That's on the defensive line, you know, unless you're going to move on from Broderick Washington, there weren't that many, jerseys to go around.
Yeah, I think you're 100% correct on that. And if I on the offensive line for starters, I think that their big concern should have been and was growing the 2026 roster into something they could live with, because they thought they had a basic set of guys that would work for 25. And I think that, by the way, I think they're still there with the exception of left tackle, which I'm no longer sure about with Ronnie Hurt. I think that I still would give Voorhees additional leash. I think Falele is no problem at all as of right now. that he could develop into a problem again, I might have to recant. But he's now played 8 games in a row where he's only had one bad one. And I know enough from offensive line grading for a lot of years, it's very common to have one, you know, real clinker in 8 sure. games. He's had a bunch of good ones too. I mean, it's not like he hasn't, every other one was average or maybe a D, and then he got an F. He actually, his lowest grade he's had is a D minus. Voorhees through 2 games was 3 games below passing. And the point I made about that was that there was no point in all of 2024 when Fa'alele had a very rough first 14 games of the year where he had 2 games as bad as what Voorhees had done in those first 2 games. So I'm not understanding the Fa'alele hate at this point. You know, embrace the solution that the Ravens have in front of them, because I don't believe there's a better one on the roster. Now, that said, I really wish they'd done more to foster the 2026 interior line depth, with the likelihood rising each day that Tyler Linderbaum will not be back. Right. So that's the place where, and I think, you know, I don't doubt, you know, you'll talk to us about, you know, the lack of wisdom in using the 25th overall pick on Linderbaum with all the risks that entailed. And I hope they've learned from it.
Yeah, I hope they learn from it. To Garnett's defense, he's been saying this since the beginning of the summer, since June. They need better interior blockers. That's why they lose in the playoffs. I don't necessarily agree with him, but he's been consistent. This isn't a new thing that he just came up with to criticize. I do wish that the Ravens took size and shape, positional scarcity into account more in the contracts and the draft. And I'll leave it there.
Yeah, I it's hard for me to point to which contracts that I think they've done that were not good size and shape, because I think they make very, very good second contract decisions. Part of that is born of necessity, Voss, because they end up with way more players than they can sign every cycle that they work through. Whenever they have a big draft, 2018, 2022, and they've had other good ones.
Sure.
You know, they end up at the end of that cycle with more players they can do. And they do a really good job of unwinding the draft by trading players. So the 2018 draft, they traded Hurst. Then they traded Orlando Brown and got real value for him. Then they traded Kenny Young as well in the process to get Marcus Peters when that was of value to them.
Hollywood. And I was against that one. I was against that one, strongly against that. And it turns out I was dead wrong about that. Hollywood trade was a great one for them.
It was great value. But they used it on Linderbaum.
Yeah. It is what it is. On that related note, the Athletic just put out their tiers list of front offices. The Ravens ranked number 2, only behind the champion Eagles, who have billions of dollars in void years that they haven't seen yet. And the Ravens were number 1 last year. They're definitely one of the best front offices. I don't think there's any question about that. I'd like to see perhaps a little bit sharper coaching to get the results they want on the field.
You know, they've done such a good job of building coaching staffs year after year and having their people be the people who are in demand elsewhere. I mean, you can't keep everybody. It's very much like the players, except in the players' case, maybe you can keep 3 out of 4 or 3 out of 5 of your kind of your graduating 4th-year players, if you're lucky. In the coaching ranks, it's nowhere near that. Everybody wants the top job, and they all move on when the time comes. And so your guys who are like, you know, McDonald, there's just no way in hell you can keep that guy.
Yeah, no, they couldn't keep McDonald unless they got rid of Harbaugh. Mm-hmm. But could they have kept Orr as a linebackers coach for another year or two? He's never had play calling experience, and kept Anthony Weaver or Denard Wilson, who were already on staff, probably. Awesome. Could they have looked around and seen, is there an upgrade over George Warhop? Because he was we have to make a move now. You can nitpick it if you want to. It's not flawless.
I would agree. I certainly wouldn't claim that it's flawless. I think they've done a lot of good things, bringing in older coaches to try and mentor younger coaches in ways that should help. So with Pease and with Pagano, they did it. In a sense, that's what they did with Warhop. Warhop, I'm a little surprised he's still the offensive line coach right now. A little. Mm-hmm. You know, that they would have got out and gotten somebody else. The Ravens offensive line coaching job has got to be one of the most sought after in the NFL. Offensive line coach is very niche responsibility. Those guys do not typically move up to be offensive coordinators.
Right.
It's very, very unusual. So
Mike Tice is the only one. Yeah, that I can recall.
So if the guys are going to stay at there, and you can just identify the best young offensive line coach and bring him into Baltimore. I mean, I can't imagine a better situation than what you have here with Lamar Jackson.
Right. Well, I think the same could be said about defensive coordinator. That's a coveted job. And let's hope Zach Gore turns some things around this in week four against KC in Arrowhead.
So I want to put this on a scale of 1 to 10, because I think that's always good when we put a stake in the ground.
Yeah.
What do you think the odds, give me a percentage chance. The percentage chance Zach Orr is the defensive coordinator for the 2026 Ravens. I got to get my number out here.
After 3 weeks of data.
Yeah.
Um, 20%.
Okay, I think it's much higher. I'm going to say 55, and I think that part of the 45, the part that of him not being here next year, is that they perform so well over the remainder of the season that he gets a better job somewhere else, whether it's a fast track on a coaching job or whatever it might be with another organization. But I'd say he's 55% to be here next year, 10% to be somewhere else because he's got a much better deal, not because the Ravens forced him out or anything. And then maybe about 35% to be gone because they fire him. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Ravens are not a team that makes scapegoat fires. So I don't think they're going to pick on Orr and say, you got to go because a sacrifice has to be made when the fault was not really his. If the fault was his, yes, absolutely, they might make the move. But if I don't think they make scapegoat hires, I don't think they have a record of that I could point to.
Cam Cameron? No.
Cam Cameron. That's an interesting one. So they got somebody else. The problem with Cam Cameron, I don't think it was a scapegoat thing as much as he and Flacco just didn't get along. They just hated each other. So Flacco was caught by various people, saying, yes, Cam, kind of thing. And anytime, by the way, this is good professional advice for anybody. Anytime you're in a professional sentence, in a professional setting, and you start a sentence with Johnny, whoever you're talking to, you're using condescending language.
True.
And it's something that people ought to know, and even when you do it imploringly, you say, Ken, please understand, this kind of thing. It's often condescending. It's you know better than they do, and it's never reacted to well. And that was what Flacco was doing with Cameron back then.
Yeah, I think the Commanders Redskins game was quick story here. Now that we're at the end of the show, I think it's the only away game I've ever been to, and we were on a bachelor party, and we had what's called dream seats, which were 3 yards off the end zone, the one that Bolden kept scoring in, and the Ravens sat on the ball. Played for overtime, and when they had a chance to try to get a field goal, lost the game. And I made eye contact with John Harbaugh and said, "You need to be more aggressive." And he looked at me and nodded his head. And the next morning, they fired Cam Cameron. So I'm taking full credit for the 2012 championship.
All right. Well, maybe that was it. there was, even after they got rid of Cam Cameron, the interesting thing is Cam Cameron still got a ring for that 2012 season, but it was. I want to say you Jackson, but that's not right. Is it you? What's the guy's name?
Jim Caldwell. No,
yeah, Jim. You're right. It is
Caldwell. The OC. Yeah.
I don't know why I'm making that mistake, but anyway, during the if you look at the Ravens video of their season from that year, they really talk at halftime, and they're down 13-7 to the Patriots, and Harbaugh's on the headset and saying, "Look, we got to open it up in the second half," and they went to that directly out of shotgun. Offense that the Patriots had no answer for. So it can be, and there have been times at very key moments in Ravens history where Harbaugh has redirected the offensive effort in ways like that, that have been positive. Anyway, I'll this is a very hot week, obviously, for this, and I hope next week is not hotter.
Yes.
In terms of what we've got, but this is a team that got beat pretty soundly, clearly, in terms of what they were doing. I think from just my own perspective in the game against the Lions, I'm treating this more like the loss to the Eagles last year. Mm-hmm. This is a very high quality opponent. They lost by one score nominally. They really lost that game by more than one score in terms of how bad they looked on the field. Same as with the Eagles. And the Eagles went on to be Super Bowl champions. It would not surprise me at all if the Lions win the NFC this year.
It's not a beauty pageant. You can win games ugly. They were within one score under 2 minutes. So it wasn't the ass kicking that some have made it out to be, in my view, at least on the scoreboard. But at home, Monday night, blackout, you know, light show, that's where it kind of anties up the heat a little bit, I think.
Always great talking football with you, Voss. Now, I wanted to do two things. First of all, tell folks where they can talk football with you online. Brief also promo for your restaurant.
Yeah, I am on Twitter X at Vasilis Fiammata, VASILISFIAMATA. Fiammata is the name of our new restaurant. Website is thefiammata.com. Please think of us for your corporate holiday parties coming up soon.
Okay, recommend the pizza that they make there on site. And you've got a brick oven, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and it's not one of the ones that you can get super hot, but it's a brick oven. You multiple levels of pizza oven. You can really spend a lot of money, right, if you want.
Yeah, it's 800 degrees, not 1200.
Okay. All right. And I've had it there. I love the Meat Lovers pizza. I'd recommend that. But the time I had it, I actually saw Voss himself was eating it at the bar on the way out. So I felt good about, about the fact that it was a chef's choice here. So. All right. I'll say this. I hope you have not gained a lot of weight since you opened that restaurant, Voss, because it's great food. And, yes. And I, you know, you eat there a lot. I can't imagine you haven't put on 15 pounds.
No, I'm actually trying to lean out a little bit. A lot of salads and protein lately. And protein. You know, once you get to my age in the early 40s, it's hard to keep it off.
Yeah. Well, I have a slight amount of familiarity with that being 62. So, other folks out there, thanks very much for listening. We appreciate the listeners, and we know how much you appreciate the Friday Morning GM show, and receive a lot of positive comments about it. Please tell one other person about it. If you think this is content they should hear, always share that with one additional person is always the single word of mouth request I would make. For Vasilikos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM. Okay, very well done.